This Hour in Radio, your home for NASCAR. We're Racing Talk Radio, presented by Owasi Chase Air Systems. On 101.3 The Buzz, now live from the Valvoline Instant Oil Change Studio. It's Jamie Kyle and Scott Webb.
And Jason Hildebrand.
Hello and welcome to the fastest hour in radio, whether you're listening to us on 101.3 The Buzz or the TuneIn app. Thank you so much for joining us and making us a part of your day. Here's what's coming up on today's show. We'll be breaking down this past week's race, at Bristol.
Race.
You know, if I could have found a broom, I would have brought it, because we'll hear from Kyle Busch, your winner of all three races at Bristol. Also, big-time news, Earl Barbin, spotter for Jimmy Johnson, will be joining us to discuss his role as spotter for Mr. Seven-Time. Power rankings? Oh, yeah. Whitfield Media Group brings you power rankings, and we got them. And so much more on today's show, Racing Talk Radio, presented by Owasi Chase Air Systems on 101.3 The Buzz. I'm Jamie Kyle. To my left, there's so many things I could say right now, but I'm not going to. To my left, our co-host, filling in for Mr. Hildebrand, boss man, Sean Whitfield.
So if someone's looking at their radio, where would I be?
Hold on, I'm drinking my Monster Energy ultraviolet drink right now.
Woo! Fired up! Boss man came with some Monster Energy drinks
today. So it is good. And of course, I'm sorry, you're cut off. I'm the host now.
It's not like he was before.
I'm glad to be here.
Yes.
Happy to be here today.
I'm sure Jason's shoes are a little bit bigger. Anyway, so
the
ugly mug across the desk from me, spinning your tunes. And keeping us in line, Mr. Scott Webb.
Now that's a monumental task.
That is true. Special guest in the studio today, Mr. Shannon Miners. You hear Owasi Chase Air Systems. Well, the man behind Owasi Chase Air Systems is right here with us. So, Shannon, great to have you in. Shannon is actually full of NASCAR knowledge. We didn't know that, but you know, after I've met with him, I know how much NASCAR he knows. So we'll have a hard time keeping him quiet over here, I'm sure.
Yeah, right. And I believe he's a junior fan.
He is. There's an 88 on the back of his truck. So what I found out is that he also is a J103 fan, which kind of leads me to my next statement, which doesn't really go together. He's also an Alabama fan.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
See, we get rid of one Alabama fan, and we gain another.
Is it in the
radio station makes up for it.
I was going to say, is the racing... Is the in our bylaws, is it required that we have an Alabama fan in the house?
It must be. I don't know. That's the boss man.
Maybe we need to look at our bylaws on that. It might need to be changed.
Can we go to that charter for the radio show here?
I think maybe it's just not any other SEC school other than Tennessee.
We might have to pull a Trump on that one.
Hello.
Getting political.
Hello.
All right. We got to get to racing because that's what we're here for. So I went to Bristol this past weekend. I know that everybody has these... you know, comments about Bristol and the amount of people there and stuff like that. I will say this about Bristol is one of the things that they do really well is they put on a great show, not just the racing, which is what you go for because it's always good, but the entertainment surrounding that with concerts. NASCAR, I guess, Sean, probably has done a good job of this coinciding with the tracks of making sure that there's plenty of entertainment going on outside of just the racing itself.
You know, it is. And one thing that these speedways have gotten better and better at each and every year is making it more than just a race, making it an event, making it a weekend event where there's plenty of entertainment, plenty of activities going on, plenty of interaction with the race fans to give the race fans more bang for their buck. I read some of the things that they were going to be doing up there, but I'm curious to know from you guys, was there anything that you saw as far as pre-race entertainment or something going on outside the speedway that was new and different that caught your eye?
I mean, you know, you had Monster Energy had a big presence there. You could definitely tell a difference from when Sprint was there, how different it is with Monster Energy. You had a lot of things going on outside of the track, which I didn't spend a lot of time out there. It was mostly inside, but just the experience itself that they put on. I heard a lot of people that I was talking to that was sitting by me talking about how they had, you know, plenty of drinks to go around out there for Monster Energy, along with a couple of different exhibits and stuff like that. So I think they've done a good job of showing their presence at these tracks, and that's been something that, it is something that I was surprised when I saw up there, because before, over the past, you know, 8 years or whatever, it's kind of got mundane with what they do.
Scott, do you think that's Jamie's professional radio way of saying that the quantity of ladies and the appearance of the ladies representing Monster Energy is better than what Sprint had?
Can I answer that?
No, go right ahead. I don't want to step
one lady, and that's my wife. So that's about it. I didn't notice any Monster Energy girls.
I'll say that I'm a fan of the Monster Energy girls.
Yeah, well,
I mean, I was a fan of the
but Jamie needs
the Sprint Cup girls too. So.
Jamie, are you admitting that you didn't talk to any of the Monster Energy?
Did not talk to one.
Never even looked at one. I bet.
Didn't even look at one. No, I was focused on drivers and crew chiefs and stuff like that.
But no, you bring up a good point. Monster Energy has certainly added a lot to the sport, and that's one of the things that NASCAR saw in the big picture when they put their agreement together with NASCAR, with Monster Energy, rather, because they are able to reach a new demographic of NASCAR fans and bring that type of entertainment to the racetrack that's never been there before. You know, we've got rock concerts, we've got motorcycle jumps, we've got wrestling, we've got professional fighting, we've got all kinds of things that are going on at these speedways in 2017 that we didn't have before. And when you heard a concert at a speedway in the past, it was always country music related. Now we're getting all types of music at the racetracks, especially to reach out to the younger generation.
Absolutely. And you could see there was the crowd was bigger, I'll say that. And I didn't really have the chance to tell if there was a younger crowd there or whatever. You had your normals. I didn't see Dale Earnhardt reincarnated. I did not run into him up there. So that's a funny story, Sean. You're looking at me like you don't know. But in the spring race, he's always present in full uniform and a hat that looks exactly like him. But
what percentage of the grandstands would you say were occupied?
I'm going to say,
because it looked full on television.
I'm going to say pretty close to 75% on Saturday night. It wasn't much different on Friday night. Of course, that's a tough deal. People getting off work, trying to get up there and stuff like that. But Saturday, it beat my expectations on what I thought it would
be. Right. It's going to be hard pressed to get back to those levels where it was, you know, jam packed, hardest ticket in the sport to get. I mean, they were traveling from all over the world to come to that track. And the popularity's not got back to there, but there was a pretty good crowd there. And it, you know, that place does hold 150,000 people. So there can be 90,000 people in that place, and it still look like there's plenty of room. So,
right. Well, two things I want to cover before we move on. I want to cover Kyle Busch, of course, but since we have Shannon in here and he's got a big 88 on the back of his truck, I'd like to find out.
Woo! You know,
I'd like to find out about, you know, this being Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s last year. I've seen several comments on Twitter about, you know, is this the worst last year anybody's ever had? And I think about Richard Petty coming across in Atlanta with I think just the driver's compartment was about all he had going in a motor. Shannon, do you see that, or do you think it's just something that's temporary now and he's going to turn it on before the end of the season?
I'd really like to hope so. I just don't really see it. I think for the most part he's pretty much done. As bad as I hate to say it, I'm a fan, but I just don't see him turning it around this year.
Well, I'll tell you what, you and Jason, maybe it's the Alabama in them that has the same opinion of their driver because they both like Dale Earnhardt Jr., Scott. But it really has become one of those laughing type of things. You listen to him on the scanner, and he just it doesn't really seem to want it.
Does he not want it? Or, you know, I think we talked a little bit about this last week. You know, part of that is ever since the crew chief change, ever since Letarte has left that team and Ives has taken over, you know, we've seen runs for stretches of times, but not really any consistent runs. And especially after he got hurt last year, we're probably not seeing the same kind of intensity that you have seen in the past. But the guy can still drive. I mean, all you do is watch him at the super speedways. When he gets a car underneath him and he's competent in the car, I think there's a part of that that lends its to his inconsistency is his confidence right now. But when he has a competent car and he's confident in what he can do, he can still do some good things. This is not a team like it was back at late in the Letarte area that was capable of winning 3, 4, 5, 6 races. This is a team that's going to be spot. They'll have a chance again at Talladega. He runs well. He'll probably run well at Darlington. He's run well there in the past. But this is not a team that's going to just pull one out and all of a sudden start running top five, top tens. They've just not shown it this year.
Guys, here's my prediction.
Uh-oh.
Junior is not going to make the playoffs. Well,
that's bold.
Yeah. So I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to go out on that limb right now and say he's not going to make the playoffs. But better yet, and this is even going to pacify the junior nation out there listening.
Here we go.
He is going to win Talladega.
Hand is
Talladega, Alabama is the heartbeat of the junior nation. If he can leave Talladega with a victory in his final season, everybody will be
satisfied. They better call the National Guard now. They better call the National Guard now.
So
they'll tear that place down if he wins at Talladega.
Well, somebody that tore the place down at Bristol was Kyle Busch. One of the things, and as I look at my Kyle Busch stand-up here that Sean so graciously gave me, is that the guy dominates at Bristol. This is not the first time that he has won at Bristol, all three races, the truck race, the Xfinity, and the Monster Cup. This is the second time. When a guy does that, and when other people are like, let's take it back to where it was, this guy really likes the way it is now. I think with his crew chief back, it's scary, Sean, that he's getting on the roll he's getting now at this time of year when the playoffs are right around the corner.
Kyle Busch is like Jimmy Johnson. You can never count him out. And we've seen this resurgence of Toyota in these last 4 to 6 races of the season, where we saw Toyota struggling for much of the season, with the exception of Martin Truex Jr. But other than Martin Truex Jr., Toyota has had a very challenging year. But it looks like that we're at that point of the season where things have turned, and Chevrolet and Ford are now chasing Toyota. And earlier in the season, it was somewhat
opposite. I get your thoughts on this. I mean, we kind of saw the opposite effect of that last year, where the Toyotas came out of the gate just gangbusters, just winning every single race, top five, all of them. And then we started to see that kind of mellow out. And we've kind of seen the flip of that this year, where the Toyota struggled coming out of the gate. And now that uptick, all of them, they're all running. You got Jones running second, may have had the best car there this past week. You know what Truex has done. We're starting to see the entire Joe Gibbs Racing organization run well week in and week out. It seems like, A, they figured it out, but we have kind of seen a role reversal from this time last year.
And then when you listen to drivers like Brad Keselowski, Toyota is sandbagging. So if that's true, which I don't believe it is, then they all need to be very worried as they get into the playoffs.
Exactly. And speaking of playoffs, let's go over the Monster Energy Series point standings. That's brought to you by Stephanie Painter at Cry Like Realtors. Listen, she's got a steal of a deal on a house, right? And
you're just directing on the fly here.
That's,
man.
That's
why,
I mean,
why even do all this stuff?
Exactly. She's got a huge price drop, 1582 Eads Bluff Road. That's convenient to Vaucler, Amazon, and the river, which is the all-important river. It's only $339,900 with over 3,300 square feet and a full basement. You can't beat that. Stephanie is the one you want to go to if you want to buy or sell your house. Make sure you give her a call, 473-9545, or you can give her a call on her cell at 650-9429. Mr. Webb, take it away.
Well, thanks for throwing the curveball in there, Mr. Kyle.
I was a pitcher.
You were a pitcher. It's now time for your Monster Energy points, NASCAR Cup Series point standings after the 57th annual Bass Pro Shops NRA Night Race. What a race it was. Kyle Martin Truex Jr. sits on top of the lead. He has got 4 wins and 35 playoff points. Wow. Kyle Busch in second. Kyle Larson third. Kevin Harvick fourth. Denny Hamlin, 5th. Brad Keselowski, 6th. Chase Elliott, 7th. Matt Kenseth, 8th. But Matt, sitting on that danger line, just right there on the edge of making the playoffs or not. McMurray, Bowyer, all of those guys right there in the mix. Jimmy Johnson, 11th. And we're going to get to talk to Big Earl, Jimmy Johnson's spotter, here in just a few minutes. Ryan Blaney, Kurt Busch, Joey Logano, Ryan Newman, Eric Jones. Don't forget, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Austin Dillon, Casey Kane, all with wins. Still got 3 spots left but points, and it's become a very tight point battle. And that is your Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series point standings.
Brought to you by Stephanie Painter at Cry Like Realtors. Huge price drop, 1582 Eads Bluff Road. Convenient to Vaucler, Amazon, and the river, $339,900 and over 3,300 square feet with a full basement. Give her a call, 650-9429 or 473-9545. When we come back, we will have Earl Barbin, spotter for Jimmy Johnson.
Hot Lap at Daytona, Racing Talk Radio, presented by Owasi Chase Air Systems on 101.3 The Buzz. We're back and talking more NASCAR. Racing Talk Radio, presented by Hiwassee Chase Air Systems on 101.3 The Bus.
Live from the Valvoline Instant Oil Change Studios, it's Racing Talk Radio presented by Hiwassee Chase Air Systems on 101.3 The Buzz. I'm Jamie Kyle. Sitting next to me, filling in for Jason Hildebrand, it's the boss man, Sean Whitfield.
What a fill-in.
Yeah, I know.
That's like pulling in Babe Ruth off the bench.
He's about as old as Babe Ruth.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Yeah. Sitting across the table, of course, Scott Webb, special guest with Hiwassee Chase Air Systems. Shannon Miners hanging out in the studio.
I don't know why I'm buttering him up. He's already brought me Monster Energy.
He brought you Monster Energy gift bag.
I've already got it. It's not like he's going to take it back.
Yeah, I can be bribed, Scott.
You can.
That's understandable. We know that.
Mental note. Right. Mental note going right now.
Exactly. All right. So it's my pleasure to bring on Mr. Earl Barbin, spotter for Jimmy Johnson. Earl, I've done some research on you, and it seems like you've done everything from, you know, driving a truck. There's even a Steak and Shake reference in there I'm going to ask you about later. But, you know, changing tires, you've done the whole fuel, you've done the jack. Is there anything you haven't done?
Well, that's very flattering, and I guess I'll have to think about that. I haven't really crew chiefed, but... I owned my own Craftsman truck there, so I guess maybe I've done that too, but only two races. So thank you very much for having me, and really, really appreciate you all having me on and chatting. But it's definitely been a great experience. You know, this is my 30th year in NASCAR in some form. So it's the only thing I guess I've ever really done, and still very excited today about it.
I tell you, I was listening to the scanner up at Bristol, and the job that you guys have, I know when we were texting back and forth, I said it's almost like you're the race controller, because you take care of things that the driver and the crew chief cannot see, and especially at a place like Bristol, and I'm sure some of the larger tracks of Super Speedway, you really have a tough job, but your job has to be there in order for things like this to happen.
You know, I guess I've been doing this for a while, and you know, yourself, if you enjoy what you do, it really just seems to be second nature, and really, you know, privileged or honored or humbled or whatever, you know, to be working in racing and to get to see, you know, 40 great drivers out there every weekend battling out, and you know, it's really not as hard if you enjoy it as much as I do. So I definitely enjoy it a lot, and it's a lot of fun.
Earl, give us a little history.
Not only fun, but it's you know, it's challenging. Every race is different, and every circumstance is different. So it's a lot of fun.
Earl, give us a little history on who you are, as far as how you became a spotter and what brought you to Hendrick Motorsports, and then being able to not only be a spotter but be a spotter for now what is a 7-time champion driver, Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah, that's it's been a pretty exciting road. I guess I started to give my background would be all my family, my grandparents, my grandfather, my father, you know, owned body shops, junkyards. My father was a foreign car mechanic, had his own business. My grandfather was tool and die mechanic, machinist. So, you know, I guess that was really going to be the my avenue. I went into the Marine Corps out of high school. And I was in motor transportation, so for 6 years in the Marine Corps there, and driving a truck. And when I came out, I think my friends and family teased me about having 21 jobs before I was ever 21 years old. And with my dad being a foreign car mechanic, I probably had every make and model there was. So I had an opportunity to I drove the dirt cars at Kenny Schrader's track there in Peavely, down in St. Louis, you know, south of St. Louis. And about every time I'd come back, the hood would be up over the windshield, or it would have caught on fire. So I never missed a race, so I really learned fast that I was a much better mechanic than I was a driver. So that just led me to trying to find me a job, and a guy I know raced sprint cars, and I helped him. He brought me into place called Motorsports International, which Penske owned. And I went in there, and, man, there was Bobby Allison's car, Rick Mears, Danny Sullivan, you know, the drag teams, the IndyCar teams. It was just, you know, walking into that place was pretty cool. So filled out an application, and 3 months later they hired me, doing some show car stuff. And then Penske, Roger Penske, started Penske Racing with Rusty Wallace. So in 1990 they moved me to Charlotte, North Carolina, and I was the research and development truck driver and mechanic. Just kind of moved from that point, and was the primary truck driver and gas man. Did that for 5 years, gassing, and then I was the jack man for 5 years. And then, you know, I'm not really sure. The story, I think, is embellished, but I think Rusty fired his third spotter for the year, and I kind of laughed and said I could do that, so he stuck me up there. And then I started spotting for him in 2000, and then it just progressed over to Hendrick after Rusty retired.
You know, one of the things that I'm always intrigued by is the relationship that the spotter has with the driver. And being that you were with Rusty Wallace and then now you're with Jimmy Johnson, did you have to handle both of those, or do you have to handle both of those kind of differently as far as what one driver wants in comparison to another? Or have you kind of just stayed the same and stayed the same Big Earl to both of them?
Well, I think that the... you know, when I was getting into sport, and Rusty Wallace, you know, obviously gave me an amazing opportunity to work on his car and to do that kind of stuff. And really, I learned about racing, and he was really a good friend of ours. And, you know, it was more of a hanging out with them in that era, in the early 90s. And, you know, you did everything together, you know, and now as time moves forward and drivers, you know, have, you know, things have changed. Sponsorships and obligations and time on the road, obviously our racing has gone from, you know, 26 races to 38 races. So really it's more, you know, not as tight. I mean, it's very tight-knit, but it's just a little bit, you know, people have their own things and their own agenda these days. So outside of the racetrack, you know, not so much. But I think the same common factor is I think that the guy driving the car has to trust you. And I think that your job, my job has changed. I think spotting has changed. You know, you used to go up there, and it used to be a guy, and he'd talk on the radio, and he'd let you know if there was a crash and try to get you through it. And I think that now, and it's taken a little bit, you know, to adjust. You'd like for it to just be like that, but it's taken a little bit to adjust to, you know, you're trying to tell them where the lines are and watch other cars, you know, if they're catching us or if we can't catch them. And it's not in the vision of the driver to see, so you're trying to, you know, explain to him what lines other people are running, if they're going faster. And you're really spotting all around the car, just not out in front waiting for a wreck. You're letting him know where that car is running on the track so he can adjust his line, because it's so difficult to pass. The competition is, you know, it's staggering how close the competition is. We have 13 different winners or something this year. There's just three guys hanging on the edge of trying to get into the playoff by points, and there's probably five or so, or even more than that, deserving. So you just have to, you know, you have to not only pay attention to what's going on in front of them, but kind of like watch other people's lines, and then really tell them where that person is that's trying to overtake them, so that we don't have to try to get past that person again on the racetrack or on the pit road.
Hey, Earl, a lot of times when you're watching a race on TV or listening to it on the radio, they'll start talking about spotters making deals and a lot of wheeling and dealing going on up there up top. How much of that is how much of that does take place during a race? How much are you spending time communicating with the other spotters and trying to talk through things and issues that may be happening out there on the track?
Well, if you're faster than somebody and you're catching maybe lap cars or something like that, that's one agenda you have. You go down, you make sure that you know what line they're going to run, you tell them what your line is preferred, and then they try to get out of your way. You know, I mean, those guys are professionals out there. They're trying to move. You know, it's like a guy that's running 3 seconds slower or is having a difficult day is not going to not hold a front runner up. I think that it's speedways, teammates working and things like that. I think that you talk a lot. I think that, you know, you kind of saw that at Indianapolis this year with a couple guys that teammates. They were you would see somebody that would take the outside, and the bottom guy would, you know, let them have the run. And, you know, mostly all that stuff happens in teammates and stuff like that. Now, when you go to speedways and you're trying to say, okay, we're going to push you and we're going to do that, man, all that sounds really, really good until it's to a disadvantage for you and you're just going to go your own way. So I think that it sounds really good until the flag drops. So we have a lot of plans on the way, and I think that gets foiled by, if it's to your advantage, you're going to help the person. But if it's not, you're going to try to go win.
Earl, I've got two questions here. The first one, when you're at the racetrack, who do you consider your direct boss? Who do you actually take orders from during the race? Would that be Chad Knaus?
It would be. I think it's really, you're there. You're the you're on the driver's, you're all the same team, but you're just looking out for that guy. And, I think it's a mixture of both. You know, the crew chief is wanting to know some information, and that's your job is to, give him that information too. You know, our spotting is not just the 3 or 4 hours on Friday. It's, on Sunday. It's Friday and Saturday also. So you're kind of, your timing maybe, I time some pit entries, timing maybe segment times at places that are challenging, Indianapolis, Pocono, places like that, so that you're giving the crew chief that information. And then, you're broadcasting to both of them and the 12 guys on the team, Friday and Saturday. They're all hearing what you're saying, but 90% of my reporting to is to the crew chief.
Can you describe from your perspective what type of relationship Chad and Jimmy have? Because we all know that they have the longest driver crew chief relationship now in Monster Energy Cup Series. And we hadn't heard so much of this recently, but it seems like in the past there was maybe some disagreements, some chattering back and forth, not getting along. How would you describe their relationship today?
Well, I think that has been the case the whole time that they've been. We've all heard the milk and cookie story and things like that. And I think that I'll tell you the way to describe both of these guys, and they're both, the personality traits are both identical. And their dream or their only priority, obviously outside of the track, children, family, when they turn that switch on Friday, or even preparing, we have a meeting on Tuesday, and they watch film and everything else. There is nothing more important to them than winning. And they both, are coming at the race weekend with everything that they have, and they think that what they have is the best. So you're going to see, they're truly, as far as I know and what I've seen, they are great, great friends. And I think that, just like brothers and everything else, you're going to fight amongst yourselves. And obviously that's it's publicly, on the radio. They banter and argue back and forth. And one is trying to get the best out of the other and the same, vice versa. So I think it's going to stay like that. And I think until they both decide to retire, and I know that they have 3-year extensions, simultaneously there together. So we look for 3 more years of the same, and hopefully they get the best out of each other.
Earl, this story, this season reminds me a lot of last season, where you got some wins earlier in the season, then kind of went through a patch where you kind of maybe struggled a little bit. But once playoff time got here, this team escalated and took it to another level. Do you feel that momentum in the garage? Is that the way you think the direction of this team is going right now?
I think so. I think that's kind of like, I think that's vintage 48 style. You could go back and see a couple years like that. And in 2006, my first year, you know, we knocked it out of the park and got a Daytona 500 win and then something else. And then all of a sudden we weren't doing very well and we crashed at Richmond and, you know, some things. And then all of a sudden, wham. And then like last year, was similar to this year. And, you know, to be real honest with you, going into the, I mean, I always have hope. I mean, if Jimmy Johnson's out there and we're on the lead lap and there's 10 to go and he's running 15th, I'm hoping for a caution, and I really have expectations that he's going to pull something out of the hat and miraculously win. So I have, I don't doubt what's going to happen. But we go to Homestead last year, and man, I wasn't thinking about ordering a tux to go to a banquet. I mean, I was like, we're running fourth, fifth, sixth, something like that. I mean, we really, those guys were handing it to us down there in Homestead. And then all of a sudden, two guys, we get a restart. I remember telling him 35 laps to go, you know, just hang in there. You never know what's going to happen. And all of a sudden, we get a caution. And then two guys are going for the same real estate, and then one gets knocked out, and the other one's got damage, and I think Kyle Pitt, and we end up on the inside on the front row on the last restart, and I'll tell you what, you know, you get him to see the front of that. I mean, he didn't even have to win, and he did. He had never won at Homestead. He didn't even have to win the championship. He just had to be the first of the four cars in the playoffs to cross the line, and man, he just mashed the gas, went by Kyle Larson in turn two, and I said clear, and I couldn't believe we won championship. So you never know what's going to happen, and we're just I'm fortunate, and our team is that we have an opportunity to get into the playoffs here, and we have 10 races to duke it out, and hopefully we're in the final four.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Racing Talk Radio presented by Hiwassee Chase Air Systems right here on 101.3 The Buzz. Our guest today is Earl Barbin, spotter for the number 48 of Jimmy Johnson's Lowe's Chevrolet. Earl, my next question is, how does a spotter and how does a team communicate, or how is the operation set up when you're at a racetrack like Indianapolis, where from the spotter's stand, you can't see the other side of the track, or maybe like Talladega, where it's such a large track, 2.5 mile track, you can't visibly see that well. How does that work? Do you add one or two more spotters to the group?
At every place, at Indianapolis, we're on the pagoda. So for the most part, you're inside the racetrack. And I really try to take, you know, I'm the spotter, so I should take the most. I try to take from the exit of one to the exit of four. And then I have our shop foreman has been racing for a long time, and he's been doing it with me. And he just takes the front straightaway. Same thing in California. He does, like, turn 11. Well, we go to Watkins Glen, and we have four people there. I kind of take the last corner up through the S's, and then the shop guys take the S's, and then I have another person in the bus stop, and then I have another one off the sweeper. So you just have to hand that off, and we designate, you know, places to do that at. So somebody has an eye on him the whole time. Daytona, Talladega, Pocono, places that are really big. Night races, Charlotte, Daytona, places like that. You know, it's just myself, and, you know, on a place that's difficult, you know, Daytona, Talladega, we're using a pair of binoculars about 80% of the track. So we're looking through there, you know, so we can get a good view. And then when you're at Talladega and Daytona, you're calling him clear and trying to get the block on by just a very small gap. You know, you're not, it's not like at Bristol where he drives by and he's got a half a car length and then you can call him clear. You're trying to look through a pair of binoculars at Indianapolis and try to tell him as soon as you can see some daylight that he's able to move up or move down or somebody's trying to get inside of him. So that's how we work that.
That's there's so much that goes on. That's it. When I was talking to Earl, I was like, look, I want a different perspective that the fans could hear that, you know, they may not hear on a regular show. And Earl's just brought that, because who would have thought that you had to have that many spotters, you know, around a track and all have to communicate, you know, in a way not to confuse the driver. So that's huge.
You know, and to follow up with that, if there is somebody else, and like I'm talking to engineers and I'm talking to the crew chief, and I'm talking to those other three spotters and at that one race, but then I'm talking to the engineering, you know, staff and the guys on the pit box, and we're using a second radio. So when I'm up on the spotter stand, I have four radios on. I open the NASCAR, which is a rule, so that you can tell when the caution comes out.
Or speeding penalties.
And let the driver know if he's the, you know, the free pass or the wave around, and, you know, if they have to stop the field or something. And I'm listening in Channel 2 to the guys on the box, so they can talk back and forth to me, and then the driver doesn't have to listen to that. And then I have Channel 1 on two radios, so when I key up, I can hear myself talk, and that's for two reasons. One is to make sure that I'm saying something, and then there's nothing wrong with my radio. And I always tease everybody that I have the second one on there. So if I'm the only one listening, at least somebody's listening to me talk.
That is great. Well, Earl, I've got one more question for you, and I'm really anxious to hear your answer on this. But I was reading something today about you, and it talked about the fact that you like Janet Jackson. So I'm going to need a little bit of an explanation on this Janet Jackson
fandom. I wish I'd known that question was coming. We could have had some Janet Jackson coming in off the break.
Well, you know, I'm at the age where, you know, she was pretty popular when I was young. So my favorite, yes, I like, I have to, you know, the internet is terrible. I wish I could erase some of those things. But for sure, when she did the purple rope or the purple something tour, you know, I was really hoping that I was that guy up on the table. So now that I'm happily married and the only woman I care for is my wife, you know, so now things have changed.
It's a good answer, Earl. It's a good answer, Earl.
But yes, you know, hey man, the 80s were awesome, right? You know, it was a good time.
They absolutely were. Well, listen, Earl, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And I hope sometime we could get you on soon. I really love the perspective that you bring. And good luck. I know, are you going anywhere on your off week this week?
You know, I'm not. We are building a house here in Mooresville, North Carolina, on Lake Norman. And, you know, outside of spotting and stuff like that, I mean, I was full-time shop foreman, things like that. It's kind of like eased off a bit. Well, I've taken on the opportunity to drive Chase Elliott's bus, so my wife and I travel to all the races, and we stay really out of town 5-6 weeks at a time sometime. So, you know, spotting for Jimmy Johnson and driving the coach for Chase, that keeps us pretty busy. So we're going to stick around the house and see if we can. Do you guys know how to build or lay anything, carpet or brick or anything? Because I could really use some help over there.
I just had something pop up on my calendar. I'm sorry.
Whip them up today.
Well, you know, I do know a good banker that could probably help you over there too, so maybe you can give him a call.
I got that. He's handled that part of that for me, and anybody that needs some finance, we'll hook him up with Bill.
Exactly. Bill is a great guy. So, Earl, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Enjoy your week off, and hope to have you on again soon.
All right, guys. Anytime. Thank you very much. Hope everybody, thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Earl.
Thanks, Earl. That's Earl Barber. He is the spotter for Jimmy Johnson. Really appreciate him coming on the show and sharing some interesting perspective. I knew Earl was a character. I'd been warned that he was a little bit of a character. The Janet Jackson thing did kind of surprise me some.
Yeah, that's I would have not. There would have been like I would have been like 150th on my list of artists that he would have went for there.
That he would have went for. All right, when we come back, we're going to share the power rankings brought to you by Whitfield Media Group. And then we'll talk about the off week. We'll be back in just a second.
We'll be back before Danica Patrick changes sponsors again. Racing Talk Radio, presented by Hiwassee Chase Air Systems on 101.3 The Bus. Back with more NASCAR talk. Racing Talk Radio, presented by Hiwassee Chase Air Systems on 101.3 The Bus.
Live from the Babylon Instant Oil Change Studios, it's Racing Talk Radio, presented by Hiwassee Chase Air Systems on 101.3 The Buzz. I'm Jamie Kyle, Sean Whitfield. Yes, I know, you're wondering where Jason is. He's a little busy, so we bring in the B team.
Jason who?
Yeah. That was Scott Webb, Jason Hildebrand, if you're listening. So, and then
I don't know. All I'm doing is sipping on my big purple Monster Energy. I'm all fired up. I may have to go home cut grass or something.
And a portion of today's program is brought to you by
Monster Energy
and Coca-Cola.
But the whole thing is presented by Hiwassee Chase Air Systems, which we can't tell. That's Shannon right. Miners, who's sitting with us, how much we appreciate that. And Shannon, I know this is kind of, you know, I'm sure you don't do a lot of radio or have time to do that, right?
Oh, you're absolutely correct. I appreciate y'all having me on here. I've been trying not to hog the mic, though.
Well, you've done a great job.
Exactly. Hog it for 2 seconds and tell us about Hiwassee Chase.
Hiwassee Chase, a local company here in Cleveland, just trying to take care of everybody and keep everybody heating and cool.
Exactly, and cooling's coming up, Shannon, so I'm sure you got some good specials on coming out and checking the heater and making sure it's good to go for the winter.
We actually do. We have a maintenance program that we do twice a year, only $99, and get 2 visits to get you ready for the fall and the spring.
Can't beat that. $99, just $100, Sean.
And guys, I'm a personal testimony to Carter Heating and Air and Hiwassee Chase Air Systems. They have outstanding service, quality heating and air systems. And I would encourage anyone out there listening today, it's going to be cold weather before you know it. I realize we've got a lot of hot weather still going on right now, but be sure and put this in the back of your mind. In September, October, give Hiwassee Chase a call. You can go to their website at HiwasseeChaseAirSystems.com for information, get their phone number and all. But put them on your calendar because you want to get that heating and air system checked up before we get into cold weather because there's nothing worse than your heat to go out because then you've got problems, and that's problems with the wife because
happy wife, happy life.
Yeah, she's not warm. She's freezing to death. So be sure and keep that in mind. Be sure and give Hiwassee Chase Air Systems a call. And Shannon, real quick, the phone number, please.
In Cleveland, 423-472-4569.
Or HiwasseeChaseAirSystems.com.
Make sure you give him a call or go online and schedule an appointment to come out and get that taken care of. All right, real quick, when we come back, we'll do the power rankings. You know, they're so good, we have to hold them till the end, so we'll do that right in a minute.
We'll be back faster than a Jimmy Johnson pit stop. Racing Talk Radio, presented by Hiwassee Chase Air Systems on 101.3 The Buzz. This is the fastest hour in NASCAR. Buckle up and hang on. Racing Talk Radio, presented by Hiwassee Chase Air Systems on 101.3 The Buzz. I wanna
rock. Hello and welcome back to the fastest hour in radio. Whether you're listening to us on 101.3 The Buzz or the TuneIn app, thank you so much for making us a part of your day. I'm Jamie Kyle, Sean Whitfield. I always want to say something, but I'm not. All right, so anyway, Scott Webb.
You better let that go. Man pays the bills around here.
I'm going to. Shannon Miners hanging out with us from Hiwassee Chase Air Systems. Most important time of the show now. As you know, the for a long time, the Power Rankings did not have a sponsor, and we secured a sponsor for the Power Rankings, and that being Whitfield Media Group, and he so graciously provided the sponsorship for that. So
he's sitting around thinking,
is considered fake news.
Yeah. Well, we're pretty good at that these days, right? So we'll go with it. All right, I've got my power rankings. Of course, I've got the number 18. Why would you put anybody else at the top of the line?
I don't know.
And then Kyle Larson, number 2. I've got Martin Truex Jr., number 3. 21. Ryan Blaney really impressed me at Bristol. I've got him 4, and then the 77. I put Eric Jones in there because here's the deal. I said when he won the pole, he wouldn't last. The mug lasted all night long, and really, if he wouldn't have lost the handle, he would have won it.
I think he had the best car.
So it is good. Jason's, he's got the 10, the 10, the 10, the 10, and the 10. So now we know what he has. Sean Whitfield.
You know, I've put a lot of thought into this.
Like every minutes?
Every time that he gets here.
I'm going to go with Denny Hamlin, Kevin Harvick, Kyle Larson, Kyle Busch, and Martin Truex Jr.
That's stunning.
Is that like the top?
That is the top 5. Yeah,
that's the top 5 backwards.
Just like he does every week when he shows up.
Well,
here.
I figured that since we're wasting 4 hours of good radio, I might as well.
We're wasting a lot of things.
That's Babbling Racing Radio, right?
I've got Truex Jr. on top. Kyle Busch leapfrogging.
Frogging.
Kyle Larson this week. I like the 21 call. I actually have the 21 In the four
probably the
spot,
first time like, you've ever said you liked anything
something that, that absolutely and I got Kenseth in there. I thought Kenseth has run terrific the last 4 weeks. He just needs to get that win to secure a spot, so look for him to run strong again at Darlington in 2 weeks.
All right, Shannon Miners, I know you got the best power rankings ever. Go ahead.
Yeah, I pretty much start out like Scott. Got to 78, the 18, the 42. But then that's when I change it up a little bit. We'll go with Harvick and then Hamlin.
Still going with Harvick. I mean, it seems like Harvick's kind of fell back some. But I like the thought that Shannon's got going over there, because Harvick normally runs really good in the playoffs, and he's already in, so should be exciting to see. All right, next race, Sean, we're going to Darlington, in the, not this weekend, but next weekend, a little throwback action.
That's right. We got the weekend off, so be sure and join us right here on 101.3 The Buzz. Next Wednesday at 5 p.m. Today, there's a little bit of a programming change, but next week we expect to be at 5 p.m.
That could be a mouthful.
Be sure and right tune in to Racing Talk Radio presented by Hiwassee Chase Air Systems and get all the latest news as we head to Darlington.
You know, it's probably good not to let him come on because he always talks a lot when I throw. It's like a two-word answer is all he had to provide.
Except for when you talk a lot and I'm trying to get you to wrap things
exactly.
up.
So thank you for joining us today, and we really appreciate Earl Barbin coming on with us, and hope that you will tune in next week as we'll be breaking down Darlington. Talk to you then.
This has been Racing Talk Radio, presented by Hiwassee Chase Air Systems. Join Jamie Collins, Scott Webb, and Jason Hildebrand every Wednesday, 5 p.m. right here on 101.3 The Buzz or on your TuneIn app. This has been a production of Whitfield Media Group.